accession number 23200, reel 11.
What sort of leg has she got, you know? Well, we couldn't think of that one. They said, okay, we'll go along these legs, and we're showing all these legs, and it's that, you know, it's got a leg like that, you know, that one. And I'll guarantee, out of six of us, there's none of us could pick anything that one. The only legs we could pick out was the bit and sister's legs, you know, that was walking about. And we thought, oh, it's got a leg like that. Well, it's the size such and such, that one, you know. Would you like some? She said, well, so you, what about your mother? What about your sister? Is that, you know? Well, we've got that many boxes, is what I call it, silk stockings, you know. That one. It was.
Mr. Kitcher, really, Leverett. We'll take up the story when you got back to Chatham, and you got all these gifts with you. I think that's the point of what you're saying. If you carry on from there.
Well, what happened was, what I had with us at the time was cigarettes. And I'll be honest with you, I had more cigarettes than what I should have had. Because in the kit bag, I had about, what I call it, I had about 10,000, what I call it, cigarettes in my kit bag. In my hammock, sorry. I had 10,000 in my hammock. And I had the same amount in my steaming bag. I had silk stockings stuffed in my cases and this and that, you know? The only kit I had was the kit I was wearing because my kit bags were still on the Queen Mary because we couldn't get them up on account of the rough weather. And we were told that our kit bags and everything would follow to Chatham. So when we get back into Chatham, as I say, we're in Chatham, we're told point blank, we couldn't stop because we only had one out-use fit. We were told we would have to take a leave, which would be 14 days leave. And we'd have to leave there and then. Well, we were, what I call it, said, well, what about our gear? They said, well, leave your hammock here, put in store. Well, I wasn't going to leave 10,000 cigarettes in my hammock to go to the store. I thought, well, if I can find room, I'll pick one. Fortunate enough for me, I could buy what I call another steaming bag, which I did do. I bought a steaming bag and I put cigarettes in the steaming bag, which is 10,000. I already had another 10,000 cigarettes in the other steaming bag, plus.
What is a steaming bag? I should have asked
before. It's a miniature, what I call it, kit bag. It's a one that you could carry over your shoulder. It was. It was a miniature, what I call it, kit bag. It's in between a kit bag, a touchy case. In other words, is it was, we would call them hold alls today. That's the size. But anyhow, as I say, had equivalent of 20,000 cigarettes, 10,000 I put in one, what I call steam bag, 10,000 in the other one, plus presents, what I call, was bought, it's from America, plus what I call silk stockings, boxes of silk stockings and this, that, you know. So we were told, leave your, what I call it, your hammock in store, there's your ticket to go straight out, and it was on a Sunday, I can also remember, it was on a Sunday day, get out and get out of that one. Well, we went out to go out the gate at Chatham, what I call it, barracks. The first thing the people stopped with, they were in the office at the time. They said, where are you going? We said, well, we've got a fortnight's leave. Right. What you got in your kid bags? Of course, naturally, we had nowhere to leave them. We're going to leave the cigarettes in my, what I call it, in my hammock. So we just point blank, I sent the, what I call it, the custom blow. I says, I've got, to be honest with you, I says, I've got 20,000 cigarettes in the, what I call it, in the steaming bag. He started to laugh and he says to his mate, he says, here's a sailor here, he says, he's got 20,000 cigarettes, duty free cigarettes. In his steaming bag. He says he's having no son yet, you know. And he's laughing away, you know. I says, I have the one. He says, here, pull the other leg. He says, get yourself out that gate and don't come back, you know. And I was the only one, you know, was going on the, but I was the only one that had a mouth of cigarettes. Fortunately, there was a taxi that come down and dropped somebody up. And we took advantage of the taxi to go to the Chatham station. And I tell you something, when I got up at Chatham station, I says, they would have called it a relief in my body. I thought I was going to lose all them cigarettes. And they wouldn't believe me when I told them point blank, you know, how many packets of the cigarettes I had, you know, how many cigarettes I had in the amount. They wouldn't believe it, you know. And my mate told him, said, well, he says, hey, he says, you were honest. He says, I wouldn't believe it. I said, did he hear them? I said, they would think we're having them on, you know. He says, they were glad to get rid of you, you know. And I said, when I came home, what do you call it? I mean, I had plenty of friends for cigarettes because you couldn't buy them for love of the money inside that. I had plenty of friends for silk stockings because there's nobody had seen silk stockings, you know, in the city there, you know. And different presents I brought home in the city there, you know. It was like Santa Claus coming to home, you know, at Christmas when I came home at that time, you know.
This would be about October, wouldn't it? Late October.
It would be roughly about that noon, you know.
So how long were you at Chatham when you got back from your leave?
Well, what happened when I got back to Chatham? I came back to Chatham, and they asked what to call it. You know, I mean, would I like to go to Collingwood? Well, Collingwood was like a part of Chatham. You know, it was like a training thing. Well, I said to myself, I would like to do an advanced gunnery course. I says, fair enough. So I said, well, where do you want to go back? Well, I said, I'll go back to Sheerness, where it was before, you know. So I did an advanced, what I call it, gunnery course at the Sheerness. And I think I was there for about 6 or 7 weeks.
But what were you learning there that, you know, do you remember what it was? What was it you were learning that you didn't already know?
Well, to me, it was more like a refresher course of what I'd been taught in the first place. The only difference was I had more experience with the guns than what I had when I was going through the course because I'd used them. And with going, what do you call it, back there again, I could tell them exactly what was what. I could take both of the bits. I could tell you exactly how many, nipples that was on the bofa, which had to be greased, you know, because you had to keep them clean and do that one. I could slip a bofa down, I could put a bofa back. I could do it with a holding gun. And different small arms like so that. Because when you're at sea, and you do not do a good course, you had to clean the gun, you had to strip the gun, you were showing how to strip the gun down. You had all the time in the world, and when you stripped it down, you had to put it back the same day, you know, straight after. You couldn't leave it the next day. With doing that at sea, I had more time in the film. When I got back for a refresher course, I could tell the instructors exactly, and they knew with me going to sea, you know, going to sea and doing my refresher course, they knew exactly what was like a waste of time. But at least I'd rather be in a Sheerness and stop in Chatham doing a fresher course. Because you got from the AA3 workhorse section, you got the AA2, which is what you give you what you call an increase of pay. You know, give like a higher rank, that one. Now when I left refresher course, come back to Chatham, I automatically got in the Chatham dockyard, Chatham barracks, and the first thing I was invited to say, would I like to go to Malaya on board a ship over there? I said, no. He says, what about you, would I like to go?
Why not?
Well, I was disappointed because what happened with the colour, when the war, what do you call it, was coming to an end in Germany, the ship was going to be kitted out for to go to the Far East. And when it was stopped, after the ship got so far, it got stopped. And we got kit for the tunnel to go over there. I was disappointed. And I thought, well, if I'm going back to barracks, if I'm disappointed in the first place, I don't want to, what do you call it, to go. I rather went with the lads. I'd been aboard a ship all the time, you know, and I knew them. That one. I wouldn't like to go to Manila with lads what was new. So I got an alternative, was to go, what do you call it, up the Tyneside, the commissionership up there, but to be what you call an advance party, which would be named, when I got there, would be the St. Kitts. And I was told point blank, it would be ideal for me to go, because with me being a jury, I'd be able to stop at home and go on board a ship and just walk, you know.
So when did you join, the advance party?
I couldn't tell you exactly what day.
Roughly.
It would be around about the Christmas time, or whatever, you know, that one, you know. There wasn't many, I would say about, if I remember rightly, there was only about 20 or different ranks, you know, on board the ship.
Now, what was the job of the advance party? What was the advance party doing?
Well, it was to get familiar with the, what they call it, the dockyard workmen, to find out what different things were putting in. And with you having an advance, being on board a ship, and you were showing this different parts of the ship, which I was in, what do you call it, on gunnery, you know, small arms, this, that, you know. They were putting different, what do you call it, the guns on the ship, this, that, you know. That was my section. There was ones for the boiler room, which was stokers. They had different, what do you call it, you know, different lads were sent to different places, but they were, what do you call it, you were mixing with the workmen on board a ship, different trades, you know. And I was mixed, we'll call it, with, as I say, the small arms, couldn't even sit here, apart from seamanship. And that's all of what we've done. We've only done about, I would say about 4 hours work a day, because two hours you spent at the dinner time, you know. The other 4 hours, yeah, 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon. And you used to be away out of the dockyard, out of the shipyard. Used to be out of the shipyard, away by up a sea, on the way home. Well, I only lived about 2 miles away, you know, from where the ship was, you know. But what happened was, the county manager, on board as what I call it, that was, he was on the ship at the time. He was getting the ship out, you know, for, you know, his stores out and stuff, yeah. And he asked us, he says, living here, would you like some stuff, you know? Well, there was only two, juries, the rest of them, would I call it, the rest of the lads that was on, you know, different ranks, that one. They were, what I call it, they were lodging ashore. They couldn't stop on board a ship because with their walkmen, they used to walk day and night, you know. You couldn't sleep on. So they were lodging the shore. So I said, well, I'd like to find out, you know, because he says, well, if you want any sugar, butter, meat, cigarettes, you know, sweets, you know. I says, are they free? He says, oh no. He says, you got to pay for them, you know. So I says, well, what sort of money? He says, well, you still be duty free, you know. Well, I says, well, when I go home, I say, I'll ask them. But mainly, when I got to him, I told him, there was plenty of money kicking about the time, you know, then it was. So we might have said, well, get us some meat, you know, because we couldn't get corned beef, you know, at home. And what little meat they got was only in ounces, you know. Put her. Oh, she says, get what you can and put her, you know, on Nina. And my father says, tea, he says, try and get as much tea as you can. He says, I like the tea. He loved tea because he didn't drink or smoke, you know. Drank a lot of tea. So, they would have called, they give us money, you know, they would have called. Well, when I went back the next day, went up to see, because I had plenty of tea in my hands, because there were only a skeleton crew, you know, of about, I think it was about 20 or 30 at the time. And so, anyway, what happened was, going up to see the canteen manager. He said, well, what do you want? Well, I said, I want some sugar, I want some tea, I want some butter, and I want some meat. He says, do you want any coffee? Well, I said, I'll take some coffee. But I says, I will mostly want tea. He says, what you want? He says, anything else you want? He says, you want any ham? To the ham. Well, I says, how much is what, you know? He says, well, walk it out. He says, hey, he says, hey, before we start here, he says, before I, what I call sell you the stuff, he says, this is under the counter, unofficial. He says, don't go and tell everybody. Because he says, I'll be a stop on the ship. They'll get rid of us, you know. And I says, oh, no, I says nothing. He says, what you're going to say, what I'm going to give you, this is between you and me, you know, and your mate, your other Jody friend, you know. But he says, keep it quiet from the others. Because he says, I can lose my job, you know. He says, I can get demoted, you know. But he says, if I'm up, you know, I'm going to make a bomber to him inside, you know. So he says, I'll have everything ready. He says, you got anything? Carry it out. I says, oh, I've got sleeping bags. A couple of sleeping bags. I said, fair enough. So, half past three come, goes and picks me sleeping bag, brings them home. Oh, the moon. Meat. Tin ham, you know. Look at the tea, you know. It was one packet, was all loose tea, you know, that one. Sugar and stuff like that, sweets and cigarettes. They never think, you know. They thought I'd rob the stores, but they paid for them, you know. But I got the stuff cheap, I got duty free, the second one, you know. Well, it must have been, that must have been done for about, I think it was about 10 weeks before ships company would be commissioned. But anyway, what happened in between, Aid? What happened in between, Aid? There was some extra, what I call it, sailors came aboard, but they were mostly of gunnery, you know. And what happened was they were sent advanced. So there's a total about, I think it must have been a total of, what I call it, 20 other, what I call it, lads came aboard. But mostly had been through the gunnery courses. Well, we were told at the time, we had to do what we call a drill of pulling the carriage, you know, outside the dockyard, but outside on the main road. Now, the reason for it was, there was an admiral was lying in what I call the hospital up at the general in Newcastle, and he was dying with cancer. And I had a rough idea that he would die. But what happened was, we would pull this gun carriage from the hospital down in the main area, down to what I call it, down to where the Krem was, that one. But to do it, we had to do what I call the drill outside. And as I said, I think it was roughly, I'm not quite sure, it was 30 miles, that was what I call it, or it could be more, or could have been less. I know it was about 30 with, because we pulled this gun carriage and we're practicing outside, what I call it, outside the shipyard, up and down, What we used to see, what people used to see at Watching Lot 1, and it was the same as mission, just outside the door, you know. The people in much of Navy blokes, you know, and that was in the same mission, used to come out and watch with. It was a practice in that one, you know. But without music, and then the music, it was a slow march, and it's like, yeah, back and forward. And they were wondering what it could, what was going on. We couldn't tell anybody, because we didn't know when it was going to happen. All we knew, what it could, he was dying with cancer. We were told secret that they, not to mention it, to anybody. And when I was going home, we went on that for, as I say, for a few weeks and that. And when I went home, my mother says, what are you doing now? Well, I says, we're training, what it called, to pull a gun carriage. She says, well, for the, have they got no, but of course, she says, have they got no motors, you know? What can be, mother saying? Well, I says, oh, no, I says, it's a gun carriage. I says, when somebody dies, I says, they put a coffin on, and I says, it's what it called, it's pulled by, what it called, sailors. I said, to where they're going to get buried, or go to the Grand Minister, you know? She says, well, is this happening? She says, like, you got to go away. I says, no. I says, what a call. I says, we're going to the general. She says, when did he die? I says, he hasn't died yet. She hasn't died. I says, no. I says, he's dying with cancer. But I've got a rough idea of the date, you know, and when it would be, you know. And she's prepared for his funeral. Well, I says, get the what a call it, early send off for the city of that. She couldn't understand, she couldn't make it out, you know, well, you know, how they could practice these things out. But anyhow, as I say, he did die. We had to go to the general, and we came out, what do I call it, as I say, we pulled him out the general, we had to pull through the town, down into the cramp, and he said, yeah. And then, and then we got, as I say, we went back aboard the ship, you know. And I think about a fortnight after that, I think the first ship's company came, you know, in which commission.
And you joined that, so you stayed on board
it? I was still on board, but I was like in advance part, you know. And what happened was, we would be doing sea trials with the civilians, different trades, at the shipyard, going out to sea, and we'll call it, practicing different things that was put on board a ship, the boiler room, the engine room, the guns, the compasses and different things like that. Everything that was on board a ship that was being put on by the thing, we had to think about that one, you know.
Now, what was the ship like? Can you describe her, what she was like?
It's a battle-glass destroyer. And it was a lot, what I call it, was a damn sight bigger than the one I came off, the Scholar, you know. And it was a battle-glass destroyer. The difference we found on board the ship was, on guns, take the, what I call it, the Bofors, you know. The Bofors were, what I call it, was a Dutch, an invention had been in this country. I'd invented what you call a gyro, and the gun was, what I call the Bofors, were mounted on gyros. In other words, is whichever way the ship turned, the gun would be level. You know, just like a compass. Stop level, the ship could turn any way you like, but your gun would never move, you know. It was balanced, and they said, yeah. The gun sights on it, what I call it, on the Bofors, was gyro. No. I picked this up, these gyro sights, from his, what I call his refresher course, when I went to GNS. The only difference was, when I got, what I call, aboard a ship, and coming out the gyro on there, I had to go to sea. We did a fire on the outside. But all I found was, you had a cross, and the cross used to be on the, what I call, on the gyro, and you had to line it up on your target. But I found out, we're being on, what I call, manual, The gun was more quicker on work or on the target with manual than what it was with gyro. Because we found out the gyro site, the cross, it was miles behind us. We had to wait to come over. And the reason why we were told wait to come over before, so we could fire and find out if the gyro site was genuine. You know, well, we thought it was very, very slow, you know, because we could sight with the targets up, with ordinary sighting, manual, you know, and what we could with a gyro. And instead of cutting quick enough, we couldn't improve on it, but we just had to get used to it. In other words, it would have to slow down on it, you know. Well, it was a hard thing when you had to use it by manual, and using gyro, because it's you had your gun in place, but your sight was seemed to be miles away, and you had to wait to come over and it's like, you know, I thought, well, what a sheer waste of time. If that had been in the last big war, it would have been some by now, you know, and it would have improved on it by now, which I know it had. Well, anyway, as I say, we did a lot of work called the sight training and different things and stuff, you know. When we used to come back at night time, with the lads off the shipyard, you know, and it's like, you know, half used to be seasick, the other half was, you know, didn't know where they're coming or going, you know. But anyhow, when we used to come into the town, the funny part about it, the skipper, I do not know why, but every time he came in, there was two ferries in the town. It was Heaven Ferry was one side of the town. That's where I lived. And it was World's End Ferry, which was opposite, where it was outside, what I call it, the shipyard. That was the one known as. And he had a dock alongside, what I call it, and it was one known as him. But the only trouble he had, when he used to swing round, used to hit what it calls Shields Ferry. And not Shields Ferry, World's End Ferry. And then he would hit Heaven Ferry landing. Not the ferry, but the landers in the city there. And he had more trouble at getting the, what I call it, at getting it alongside, think about that one, you know. Because what you had to do, coming in, you had to get used to the work called the River Tyne. You had to get used to the rivers by on his own without tugboats. You had to get used without a pilot. And this was all in the trials. If it hadn't been a pilot, we would have had no trouble docking. If I had tugboats, there would be no problem. But you had to get used to the work called. You had to get used to the controls of what I call the ship. And that's how he was hitting different, what I call ferry landings. What happened was, when we went out again, out for sea trials the following days, you know, you had to get through Badger in the Navy for about 30 odd years, you know. And he put him in a wheelhouse. And he was more, what I call it, used at fetching ships in and out, and what the skipper was, you know. And we thought it was a big laugh, you know. Him being, what I call it, he's going to commission a ship, and he kind of get it in and out at the time. It's a big, what I call it, it's a big river, you know. But anyhow, as I say, the three buds used to bring it in, and it's not you that. And the skipper seen him all right, you know, you've got spirits, you know, extra spirits in this, that, you know. So, when we had after we had our sea trials, and we're going to leave, commission the ship, and we're going to leave, and said we would be going over to Norway. It would probably do what I call it, we're going over to Norway and go up the fjords, you know, and visit the Narvik. Anyhow, as I say, off we went over sea trials, goes into the fjords and this, you know, in the bad running shows in Narvik. And we found out it's the most dearest place in the world. The drinks were about 4 to 5 times more a bottle than what they were in this country. We couldn't afford a drink, you know. If we wanted a drink, it was only a case of one bottle, you know, because they were that dear, you know. The stuff was dear. The clothes were very thin and tatty, and they were dear, you know. I thought it was a poor country, you know, but everything is going to be dear. In other words, it was a waste of time going there, you know. Sightseeing.